Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. Crank, Shabu, Special K, Chiva, China Girl. No, these aren't names of the latest YouTube music sensations. They're all street names for illegal and dangerous drugs. I'm betting, hoping, that most of you didn't recognize those names. I sure didn't. Now, most often here on American Warrior Radio, we talk to sheepdogs, law enforcement officers who protect us from bad people. Today, we're going to focus on a class of federal law enforcement agents who protect us from bad stuff. The Harrison Narcotics Act was signed into law by President Woodrow Wilson in 1914. There was little political reaction for or against it because at the time, nobody really even knew what it meant. On its face, it was just another tax law, and as such was left to the Treasury Department to enforce. The IRS established the rather underwhelmingly named Miscellaneous Division with a grand total of 162 agents. They were allowed to design their own badges. There was no standard blueprint. Some ended up with military-looking badges, others more reflective of the Old West. And as revenue agents, they essentially worked on a bounty system and without official advanced funds. The sad state of affairs was reflected in a letter one poor agent sent to his superiors. Court just closed here. I got 13 convictions, one for moonshining and the balance for narcotic violations. I expect to leave here this week for Fort Worth, which has the reputation of being a real dope town. My only experience there so far was the loss of $15 2 months ago buying an 8 ounce of morphine. I got the morphine and the man all right, but not the $15. And unfortunately, the revenue agent here did not have the funds to reimburse me. In 1973, President Nixon declared an all-out global war on the drug menace and the need for a super agency to coordinate all drug enforcement. The DEA was born. Just to give you some perspective, ladies and gentlemen, in 1917, the total recorded amount of opium seizures was 5.5 pounds nationwide. Earlier this month, the DEA recorded its largest ever seizure of methamphetamines, 2,200 pounds, along with 893 pounds of cocaine and 13 pounds of heroin. Joining us today to discuss how things have changed and what that means for our communities, DEA Special Agent William Chopek. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Bill.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, other than the fact that the scariest Halloween ever is when you get a voicemail message saying, hello, Ben, this is Bill with the DEA.
I could see how that's scary.
It's not because I have a guilty conscience. I want to be clear about that. Bill,
well, I'm excited to be on your station.
Well, and it's going to be informative because I'm proud to say I don't know much about illegal drugs. But in doing prep, it was enlightening and scary, Bill, and I think it's information. I know it's information our listeners need to hear. Let me start off, Bill. One of my favorite, shout out with the most recent passing of Sean Connery. One of my favorite films ever is The Untouchables. And in the film, Connery plays a Chicago beat cop. He encounters Kevin Costner, who portrays the legendary prohibition agent Elliot Ness. And there's a scene on the bridge when Connery discovers him carrying a concealed weapon, and Costner declares why. Connery shrugs, turns around, walks the other way. Costner shouts after him. It's like, what, why would you just let an armed man, why would you just turn your back and walk away from an armed man? And Connery replies, who would claim to be a Treasury agent who wasn't? So all the way around the barn, Bill, how many young kids grow up thinking they want to be a DEA agent? And was that you?
I always wanted a career in law enforcement. I didn't know specifically when I was younger that DEA was for me, but I knew law enforcement was exciting. I knew there was opportunities beyond a regular job, and I knew it was something I can have fun with every single day. And so,
you've got a different definition of fun than me, brother, but okay.
I'm a military veteran myself, and I don't know if that, for lack of a better word, spoiled me, but coming up, when I got out of the military, I was in the United States Navy and, honorably discharged in 2009. I kept looking around. I said, I gotta do something fun. I gotta do something that's exciting. And law enforcement, whether that was county, state, federal, it just seemed to be the best fit for me at the time.
How many, I mentioned 162 agents when things first got started. Bill, what estimate total personnel, not just special agents, but total personnel of the DEA now, about how many folks?
We're several thousand agents and then employees total, support, administrative, technical, would be, I believe, approximately in excess of 10,000. So the special agents, the ones that carry the gun, do the enforcement of the criminal law, I think is around approximately 5,000. And then once again, probably an extra 5,000 support personnel, somewhere around there.
You know, it's interesting also for people to recognize, I mean, you know, door kickers like you probably get all the press, but I was reading an AP News article where they're allowed to sort of witness behind the scenes the latest national big bust, and they describe sitting in a room somewhere in Virginia where there's this heat map up on the big computer screen, and as the arrests were effectuated, you know, bang, here's a red dot all across around the country. And so, I mean, you've got analysts, you've got researchers, you've got IT people. I mean, you got the full thing, right?
We are not only that, we're national, but we're also global. And so we recognize that in order to combat these large scale drug trafficking organizations, we have to work with internationally. So we have over, I believe it's 120 offices throughout every continent. And we work closely with law enforcement and military in those countries. And that way, we're more effective in protecting communities here in the United States and communities throughout the state like Arizona.
You know, no pressure, Bill, but that reminds me, we've had a couple of guys on, Javier Pena and Steve Murphy, who you probably never heard of, but they became famous for their work overseas as DEA agents, the original narcos.
Yeah, I actually I met via Zoom Steve and Javier several months ago and spoke to them. And so I know their story very well. And that's actually, you know, that's not a one-time thing. That's something DEA does daily. So we still have agents stationed in South America, specifically Colombia. We have agents stationed overseas in Mexico working, like I mentioned earlier, hand-in-hand with law enforcement. So once again, DEA is in every country that you could, almost every country you could think of.
Steve, I know a lot of folks nowadays, when they think about the illicit drug trade, a lot of cases that, you know, thinking about Mexico, South America, you know, maybe the Near East. But what, back in the, I'm dating myself here, back in the olden days, the first, I believe, public recognition of the international scale of drug trafficking was the French Connection and the famous movie. Is Europe also, you know, they can't be written out of this equation as well, right?
Yeah, so what happens is there's shifts in criminal organizations. So in the 70s, if you look at heroin with the U.S. service member in Vietnam, and it was estimated that anywhere from 10% of service members to 15 were either abusing and or dependent on heroin and marijuana. And that came from what was known as the Golden Triangle, which was Laos. At that time, the country was known as Burma and Thailand. And then drug production and distribution shifts. So we saw in the late 70s and the 80s, cocaine with Pablo Escobar, as you mentioned, Javier Pena and Steve Murray, and combating those Colombian drug organizations. And then production and distribution shifted to Mexican drug cartels, and that's where we are today. So you're right. It started back in the 70s, and it's shifted ever since.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with William Chopek. He's a special agent with the DEA. Just to give you some perspective, you know, that recent bust I mentioned, along with another seizure at the Mexican border around the same time, a spokesperson for the DEA said that was enough doses of meth for one dose for every man, woman, and child in both U.S. and Mexico. And that's just what they intercepted. When we come back, we'll be talking more about why this is a problem, and you should hear more. Stick around. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Drug Enforcement Agency Special Agent William Chopek about, and scourge is not even a big enough strong enough word for it, Bill. But before the break, I just talked about why this is a problem. And I don't know if this is an unfair question or not, Bill, but how did we get here? I mean, we're in the middle of almost a perfect storm.
It is. It is a perfect storm. There has been, over the last several years, a combination of things. And the easiest equation is the cartels are making more drugs. They're mass producing them. And the drugs they're making are much, much more powerful. And then the last part of that is we as Americans are consuming too many drugs. And so when you add those up, it equals to a lot of overdose deaths. And when I say a lot, I'm talking about last year alone was a record-breaking year. 72,000 Americans died from drug overdose deaths. And to put that in perspective, you know, a football stadium holds about 65,000 to 75,000. So you're talking about a football field, a football stadium's worth of people, full capacity, that die every year.
And that, now when you say last year, talking in 2019, the figures aren't quite complete for this year yet, right?
No, they're not complete yet, but initial numbers do not look good. It looks like with the isolation that we're seeing with COVID, where people are forced inside, and some of the anxiety and some of the other ripple effects of people maybe losing their jobs and their healthcare and other factors, that we're looking at anywhere from 150% to 200% jump in overdose deaths. So 2020 looks like it's going to be another record-breaking year.
Bill, just your perspective, because I've thought a lot about that. You know, I am self-employed, so for me there wasn't, I mean, other than the loss of some of my business hours and consulting and the challenges that's created for advertisers on American Warrior Radio, there hasn't been that much of a lifestyle change for me. But I'm also sensing out there just a general sort of malaise in our communities. And for someone like you, I mean, your job is to go out and bust bad guys and you know, seize drugs. But how, in a situation like this, what we're facing nationwide, it's out of your control. And I mean, how do you and your fellow agents, is that just part of what you do? It's like, well, that's just another wrinkle and we'll deal with it.
You know, here in Arizona and as well throughout the country, we've been effective. DEA doesn't stop working. COVID, federal government shutdown, weekends, holidays, nights, days, it doesn't matter. You know, the cartels are always shipping drugs up here. So we've actually been very successful at destroying some of their distribution and transportation cells here in Arizona. And that has an impact, because you mentioned that seizure earlier about several thousand pounds. When you could take that off the street, at the end of the day, that saves lives. Those drugs are going to end up in the hands of Americans throughout Arizona, the United States. And so that's less deaths. That's less families and people's lives destroyed. So we're making progress. But DEA recognizes we can't arrest our way out of this problem. It's one piece that we're doing that's effective, but the other part is drug awareness and drug prevention. So, you know, 2020, there's new drug threats. There's emerging drug threats to our community, and people don't know about them. So that's what we have to educate ourselves. We have to educate our loved ones. And, you know, we just have to come to terms with the fact that we are in a drug epidemic as well. You know, this country is battling COVID and some of the effects of that. But, you know, for the last decade, we've been in this opioid crisis. And so at some point we have to say, hey, enough's enough. And we have to really, we have to address the issue.
You know, Bill, I'm tend to be really a 30,000 foot level guy, and really putting on my business hat, I mean, this is a demand driven problem. If there wasn't the demand, that the cartels and other folks would be, I don't know, you know, sneaking in fake Nikes or something. I don't know, but it really is a demand driven issue, isn't it?
Yes. If we can reduce demand, you would have some notable decreases across the country. But, you know, also too, drugs are becoming more powerful. And that's across the board. Fentanyl has always existed in medical communities. It's used for surgeries, for people with really serious chronic pain, like maybe cancer. But somehow those drugs ended up on the street, and, you know, and a lot of that has to do with Mexican cartels. So we really have to address all the root causes of it. So I agree with you, demand, but we also have to figure out a way how to stop these cartels from pushing these dangerous drugs.
Sure, sure. And your average American doesn't wake up and say, oh, I think I'll go out and, you know, overdose today. That's not on their punch list, generally, I'm guessing.
No, you're right. It starts very innocent most times.
Well, let's talk about that gray area, because even for someone like me, I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around this. And you mentioned fentanyl is not, it wasn't born a boogeyman. I mean, there's sort of a gray area, at least from my perspective, Bill. I mean, you know, meth was actually, I think, you could prescribe it to treat obesity and ADHD. I can get Percodan from my dentist after having, you know, oral surgery. Where is that gray area there? And when you're, and I think it's, what I want to say, Bill, is we're not just talking about folks sneaking stuff in a tunnel across the border. This is a problem in our own backyards in some cases, and even beyond. We'll get into talking about the internet a little bit later.
Absolutely. So there's been some surveys where they've interviewed people who have substance use issues with heroin, meaning they have a dependence or addiction on heroin. Two out of those three say they started with prescription pain pills. So that's one area where we've seen where it starts very innocent. And I think everyone can relate to that, because we all have injuries. We all have illnesses. We all have, you mentioned, maybe from a dentist or where we're prescribed some type of pain pill. One of the problems we've seen, and there's nothing wrong, DEA doesn't want to get involved between a patient and a doctor. But with the danger with some of these drugs are, they are very effective at not only blocking pain, but there's a big danger of misuse and dependence. And so it starts very innocent. If someone has one of those injuries, is prescribed some pills, and then at some point, maybe they say, hey, I had a bad day, or I don't feel so good, so let me take this pill for my medicine cabinet, when they don't have pain. And the next day they say, you know what, I want to feel better again, so they take another pill. And then it doesn't take too long, next thing you know, their body's dependent on that pill. Their brain is telling them they need to take that pill every day. And so, once again, problem with taking prescription pills is eventually those run out. So after that 7 or 30 day prescription and the doctor won't refill it, maybe that person now can't get out of bed without taking some kind of opioid. So at this point they realize, okay, to roll out of bed, I need 5-7 opioid pills. My doctor won't prescribe them. Well, the street version of these prescription pain pills is heroin, powder form. And maybe they don't start it as a powder form. Maybe it comes in a fake counterfeit pill that looks exactly like the pill that you got from your doctor, but in reality it doesn't. It either has a combination of heroin or fentanyl. So it's a very innocent and unassuming transition. But once those people start taking the fentanyl and the heroin, that's when it's a game of Russian roulette, because these pills that are counterfeit don't come from pharmacies. They don't come from anywhere with a medical distributor. They come from some kind of basic rudimentary lab in Mexico where there's no quality control. So it's a game of Russian roulette when you buy pills from the street.
It's funny, Bill, when you're not funny, haha, but I realize for my age demographic, I mean, heroin, I thought was something that sort of disappeared in the 60s and the 70s. But what I hear you saying is really the, and I use the air quotes, the opioid crisis right now, that's really driving that back to market. Except,
I think the cartels and these drug organizations have done a better job of just of disguising the way they sell heroin. So maybe there's a stigma with fentanyl or heroin, but maybe when you put it inside of a counterfeit pill, we let our guard down. I think that's part of the deception that these cartels feed on, is they know Americans use prescription pills and we run out sometimes and we become dependent. And so their business strategy is to replace it with their version. and they're going to take the profits, and they're going to feed our addictions, and they do that because they're addicted to American money. So Americans are addicted to drugs, and cartels and transnational organizations are addicted to U.S. money.
When we come back, I'd like to talk about that trail of bodies, Bill. You mentioned 72,000 overdoses. The trail of bodies is not just with overdoses. The Mexican government estimates nearly 62,000 people have vanished, quote-unquote, since 2006. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bula Garcia. We're talking with William Chopek, Special Agent DEA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. We're talking with DEA Special Agent William Chopek about really the perfect storm that's happening in our nation right now, and that special group of sheepdogs that are protecting us from bad stuff. At least that's how I started the show. But there's also some bad people behind this. Bill, you know, first of all, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of folks, when they think about addicts, you know, there's a certain image that comes to mind of what we see in the movies. But really, for a lot of these folks, you know, it started off innocently enough, and they're really stuck in a bad place, a compromising position. But let's get to the real bad stuff. What's happening? In this case, let's talk about what's happening on our southern border down in Mexico. I talked about all those folks that have been quote unquote disappeared, and just the violence that's taking place down there, and how many families that's ruining as well.
Absolutely. So it's, for lack of a better term, it's a war zone down there. There's competing drug cartels who fight each other, who fight Mexican military and National Guard forces, and they're trying to control smuggling or transportation territory. So if they can control the highways, the cities, then they could get their drugs from point A to the border and from the border into the United States, where they make money. But in order to do that, they have to maintain control. So they have weapons. They have heavy weapons. They have 50 calibers. They have RPGs. They have grenades. They're well armed, and they have lots of soldiers down there, or for lack of a better term, you know, these cartel hitmen. And so there's multiple cartels throughout Mexico, once again, because they want control, and control equals money, American money from the sale of drugs.
And really, Bill, from your perspective, have we encountered, because it's demand driven and because there's so much money involved in this, is it sort of like a whack-a-mole? I mean, when the Mexican government or we or both of us arrest a big hitter down there in the cartels, I mean, that just creates a void that's filled by plenty of other folks willing to step up.
Yeah, that is the case. You know, if you look at some of these organizations are family based. And so if you take out one or more of their leaders, sometimes you'll have family members who maybe get promoted. They were a captain or a lieutenant, for back of letter words. Now they're in charge of the organization. And the other factor too is they are a multi-crime organization. So not only do they sell drugs, but they do extortions or kidnappings. They smuggle people, human trafficking. So they'll transport 50, 100 migrants across the border, and they'll make several thousand dollars off of each person. So they're involved in every aspect of criminal crimes. Another one there is very popular with these cartels is stealing or siphoning off oil or diesel from these pipelines. So once again, they're very large, very sophisticated, and very complex organizations. So they're a force to be reckoned with.
So I've heard rumors of avocado wars. Do you know anything about that, Bill, or is that more of a somebody else's problem?
Can you give me more details?
I read an article about where, as they're looking to diversify, these organizations are now getting involved in hijacking trucks full of avocados headed north of the U.S. and then selling them, I don't know, on the green market. That was a poor joke.
You know, yeah. They once again, they make money everywhere they can. So they may tax local businesses. That might be farmers. That may be tourism businesses within Mexico. If they control a city or a territory, they're likely going to put taxes on that civilian population. They also target Americans. If there's an American there with a nice car or vehicle, there's always a possibility they're willing to just, point their gun at those people and take their vehicle. So they're opportunists. If they can make money, they will.
Let's come back to the another shout out to Sean Connery in The Untouchables. He looks at a guy and says, carry a badge and carry a gun. Bill, you carry both, I'm assuming.
I do.
Are there any situations you've encountered that you could share with us where you personally just witnessed the multi-level tragedies that we see as far as what this is doing to families, either here or overseas?
Absolutely. I think a lot of times we will target, there's multiple distribution, transportation, and coordination cells throughout the United States, but specifically along the Southwest border. So I've worked 5 years in Los Angeles and worked 5 years in Phoenix, and those are very large distribution cells for the cartels. So we will target and try to dismantle these cells. We'll execute search warrants, whether that's a house or a business. And for me, what I see oftentimes is the disruption that it causes for these communities when you have these cartel members that kind of blend in with these communities. And, they cause fear too, because people in the neighborhood know they're up to drug trafficking. They know potentially, that they're affiliated with cartel people and they're scared. So I never thought there'd be a time when I live in America where people are scared to live in their communities. And that's something we strive at DEA, is to kind of disrupt the impact and reduce the violence to our U.S. communities. So, we'll do search warrants and the neighbors will thank us. And, to me, that's the part every day that, I think we're doing better every day. We're making, maybe one person today, maybe two tomorrow, but it's a positive impact overall.
Bill, everybody knows Ben gets a dumb question every show. So you'd mentioned the number of overdoses we have with the heroin now being laced with fentanyl. Why would I want to kill my own customers?
I think it's the, when they make these pills, and you got to remember they're making millions of pills a day, and there's hundreds of labs, which means there's hundreds of different cooks that take these chemicals and they make the fentanyl, they make the heroin, they make the methamphetamine, and it's not an exact process. So they will put in what they think is a good amount to get someone high. In reality, it may be too much or it may be too little, but there's no way to test it. They don't care. Once that product leaves the door and they get paid for the drugs, if it kills 10 people, it kills 10 people. If it kills 100, it kills 100. So it's just a fact that it comes from an exact way that when they produce it.
Well, I just realized that truly was a dumb question, because why would I expect quality control in, some little lab up in the mountains of Latin America somewhere? But had to ask. To give an example of what a truly international problem this is, Bill, you had shared a story with me about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but initially a lot of the fentanyl that they were using in Mexico was coming from China, but now that's been squelched. So they're literally manufacturing this stuff south of the border.
Absolutely. So several illicit drugs come or begin their origin with a plant base. So cocaine comes from the cocoa leaf, which is processed into a paste and later turned into cocaine. Heroin in its pure form starts with the poppy plant, turns into a gum, and is later turned in when you add chemicals into heroin. So, it starts with plants. That's not the case with methamphetamine or fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid, meaning it's made with chemicals. So in order to make those two drugs, methamphetamine and fentanyl, all you need is chemicals. You don't need plants. Well, one of the largest sources of chemicals, precursor chemicals to make these drugs, is China. We're seeing these chemicals come from India and other countries throughout the world. So the cartels know hey, I could put a large order in, containers and containers from China, India, like I mentioned, they get shipped to Mexico, they send it off to these hundreds of labs, and they start mass producing drugs. So they're only limited by their imagination and their ability to get chemicals. So that's why we're seeing this increase, and we're going to continue to see an increase in the production, because they've kind of mastered a technique. They've mastered the logistics getting these chemicals. So once again, these cartels are like a Fortune 500 company. If there's money to be made, they're going to make it, even if it comes at the expense of American lives.
Bill, do you have an estimate of how many, just in the right market, the legal market, how many pills are pharmaceutical companies pushing out daily, monthly? Just the numbers would astound some people. It's got to be in the millions or even the billions, right?
Yeah, I've seen some estimates, and these are some older numbers, but I believe it was 2006 to 2012. It was in that time frame about 1 billion prescription painkillers were produced. So a billion pills a year, which is an astronomical amount.
Bill, when we come back, I want to talk about one other challenge, a curveball in your line of work that's been thrown your way, and that's the dark net and how the internet has made your job more complicated. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with William Chopek of the DEA. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with DEA Special Agent William Chopek. Bill, wow, just so much to cover, and I want this to be educational, and I know that the cartels and some of those things get the press, but there's really another issue involved here, and I think it was AARP had a study about how so many senior citizens now are being scammed with these fake internet pharmacies, and I don't know if this is an FDA issue or a DEA issue or both, but how big of a problem is that nowadays also? How big of a challenge is that put on you and your comrades' plate, Bill?
It has. It's one of the emerging threats with technology and everyone having phones, smartphones specifically. What we've seen is drugs are more readily available on the internet. And by the internet, I mean websites, social media. We see drugs being posted like Snapchat and Instagram. And so with the internet does come some dangers.
Well, I know these are desperate times and people are making desperate decisions. I don't know that I would ever buy prescription drugs over the internet, but that's just me. I mean, I can see how many of these are legit and how many aren't. Is it minuscule, Bill, or?
It's a game of Russian roulette again, because you don't know if the drug you're buying is actually has the active ingredient that you're looking for. Likely it's counterfeit. The other thing is you don't know who you're buying it from. And so is it a criminal organization? Is it really a pharmacy? Once again, there's always that danger when you don't get it from a qualified medical distribution center like a pharmacy or a doctor's office. You're taking a chance with your life potentially.
I read an article, I think it was in 2010, two guys broke into, literally busted into an Eli Lilly warehouse, made off with 40 pallets of pharmaceuticals, and then started selling them on the street or wherever they could get their hands. How likely though is it that if I'm a legit person with a legit prescription, a legit need, and I go to my local pharmacy what I'm getting is the real stuff, right? I mean, you're not seeing these fake drugs infiltrate our normal distribution system.
No, that's correct. If exactly as you mentioned, if you go to a established, well-reputable medical institution like a pharmacy, those are good drugs.
I just heard a DEA agent say those are good drugs. Mark that spot, my producer. Well, hopefully that doesn't come back and get you. So I don't want to make light of it, but really the counterfeit drugs, I think it started with, you know, stuff that folks were sort of embarrassed to ask their doctor about, you know, maybe like Viagra. And so they went out and got it on the black market. And then somebody said, hey, wait a minute. If it works for Viagra, maybe we can fool people with asthma medication or even, you know, more sadly, maybe cancer medication.
Yeah, and that's always, whenever there's money to be made, there's always somebody who's willing to do something illegal to make that money. And there's a big market for pharmaceuticals, for drugs. And it is a risk. You know, you're right. When you, I use that word good drugs, but, you know, drugs serve a purpose, you know, when they're under care of a doctor. It's when we stray from that, and is really what we're talking this whole interview about, is the potential for abuse, the potential for death. And we've seen it time and time again, and we just have to come to terms with the fact that we really shouldn't take drugs unless they come from a pharmacy, from a doctor. And I can't keep saying that, but I don't feel like as Americans we're really grasping that concept.
Well, in fairness, Bill, and I'll admit this, the answers to much of this is really a political discussion, and that's not what we're here to do here on American Warrior Radio. That's a different show. But I want to talk about maybe some options and some answers. You know, the drugs that we're talking about not always are coming from some shady character in an alleyway or some internet site located who knows where. It might be grandma's medicine cabinet. And you guys just recently had an initiative in the New England Field Division, I thought it was, where they collected nearly 57 tons of expired or unwanted prescription drugs.
Yeah. Twice a year, DEA, we do what's called a take back. And that's been going on. This is our 19th take back. And our goal is to take all the unused, unwanted prescription pills out of your medicine cabinet, and we will dispose of it for free, no questions asked. So we have thousands of collection sites, and it's in the month of October and April. And the way it works is we post those collection sites. You show up, you drop the medicines off, no questions asked, and then we'll dispose of them in an environmentally friendly way. And what we're really doing is we're taking away that opportunity for someone to walk in your house and to go to your medicine cabinet and to get abused or become addicted. So our message is don't be the dealer, dispose of the drugs.
Nice. I like it. Good drugs. Authentic drugs. That's a good, authentic drugs. What are the resources? Because when I go to the DA website, it's not all about just kicking in doors and putting folks in jail. I mean, what are the resources, Bill, are out there for folks who maybe have a problem or are looking for a way out? Or what can the DEA or what do you recommend, Bill, for folks that are looking for some help?
Absolutely. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions about DEA or what people call the war on drugs, is we are not targeting addicts. We're targeting large-scale transnational criminal organizations that sell drugs. So if you have a problem, there's resources, there's help available for you. You know, within our website, there's a treatment center locator. If you go under the resources tab, you can put in your zip code, and it'll tell you multiple treatment centers where you can get help. There's different organizations, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Their phone number, it's pretty simple, is 1-800-662-HELP. You could call them and they'll refer you to a treatment center or a loved one. At the end of the day, the message is help is available, whether it's from your state resources, your county, your town, nonprofit organization. There is help if you have a problem. So please call, please ask for help, and you'll get the help you need.
Bill, one other quick question, sort of random, not really random, but the Civil Forfeiture Act, is that, how big of a resource is that become for your agency as far as having the resources to fight this international war?
I'm not too familiar with that act and the details of it, so okay. I couldn't really comment on it.
Okay, Fair enough. One thing you mentioned, you're a Navy veteran and you got into this. What one of the things I found interesting that would be of important to a lot of our regular American Warrior Radio listeners, Bill, is I went to your website and there's a specific section about recruiting veterans. And in fact, I saw something where veterans with up to a 30% disability rating could apply for jobs, an appointment without competition. So how important, you're a walking, talking example, Bill, but, you know, how important is it the things that other veterans can bring to the table in your job?
Absolutely. I work, I'd say, a good percentage of the DE agents and employees I work with are military veterans, and they have a certain set of skills and attitude and demeanor that we want. And so, you know, we have special agent jobs, we have intel analyst jobs, we have technology jobs. So it's a good, DEA.gov is a good place to start. And within that website, there's a recruiters tab. And so if anyone's interested, they could simply start by picking up the phone or just emailing one of our recruiters and seeing if they qualify for the specific job.
Outstanding. One other thing you can also find out there, I didn't realize there's a DEA museum. Have you visited? And what can I see there?
It's actually a traveling museum. The one I saw, this is several years ago and in Los Angeles, but it's really a history of our agency as well as some of the great cases. You talked about Steve Murray and Javier Pena, and it kind of talks about how our path from then to now, and there's some great displays in there, so I highly recommend it.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for spending some time with our listeners on American Warrior Radio today, and please be safe out there. You are involved in a very dangerous, dangerous business.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having us on, and hopefully in the future we can come back on. We really like it.
That's the deal. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and others, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook. Our podcasts are available, Apple, Google, Deezer, Spotify, you name it, you can find us. But please, please share these messages. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.